Hello, and welcome back to the Dream Team, Legends of Philadelphia. These are your hosts, Tony Alley Oop Trove and Johnny Offensive Foul Zito. I'm Brian Buzzer Beater Bierman, helping out on engineering duties.
Oh, that's what you call it.
That works. You might be wondering, are these guys trying to jinx the Sixers?
All the way, baby. I got my tattoo.
They better win.
Right on your neck. It's very bold.
Well, in addition to being born and raised in Philadelphia, Trove and Zito have a lifestyle brand, South Fellini, that focuses on Philly culture and in-jokes and comfort and podcasts and basketballs. Lots of times, customers will ask, where did Dr. J get his PhD? Or they want to know if Moses Malone can part the Schuylkill River. that's a good one. Good for
asking. Biblical joke.
So we decided to start this podcast as an easy explainer for new Philadelphians and a refresher for the old heads. The city fascinates and excites us, and we're hoping to share that with you.
I got Moses on the brain. I watched the Ten Commandments. Yeah,
we do a lot of sports podcasts for people who don't really that into sports.
We're into the Bible.
I'm really into old Hollywood movies. That's what I want to talk about.
Bible epics. Sword and sandal movies.
Vincent Price is in that movie. People don't realize it.
You've chosen the topic of the episode, but this is the thing you really want to talk about. Just you should be like, you know what, everyone? I know everyone's all high on the Sixers, but let's talk about...
Shouldn't they bring back intermissions in movies? I think they should.
They should. The new Batman, too long. Give me an intermission.
It's long.
Intermission.
I got to pee.
Pee in a jar while I'm watching Batman? What's my name? Robin?
Yeah. No. This is what I wanted to talk about. We're switching it up. It's about Batman.
We do a lot of sports podcasts for people who aren't that into sports.
I've been watching.
You do watch a lot of basketball.
I've been watching all.
You don't
all
watch
the
basketball.
Playoffs.
You watch the TNT show.
I mean, that is the best part, when they scare Charles Barkley, but. No, I've been watching a ton of basketball. As we're recording this, the Sixers are down 1-0 against the Miami Heat. Joel Embiid got elbowed in the face, fractured his eye. He's got a concussion. Hopeful for game 3.
I'm hoping he comes back with the mask.
Everybody wants
bring it back, man.
Because it's threatening.
It makes him
it's
look
threatening,
mean.
And it is iconic.
Yeah, if he wins in the mask.
We'll see.
If he wins in the mask, people will never forget it.
No.
But so they're playing game 4 on Sunday, right, Zito, you said?
Yes. So
there is a chance by the time this comes out.
There's a chance where we jinx them.
They could be swept by the time this comes out, yes.
If they get swept, that's our fault. If you're listening to this and you're like, these motherfuckers, it's our fault.
Now you know who to blame.
Yeah, you can blame us. I'll take the blame.
We put the cart before the horse.
Mm-hmm.
We're excited. We like basketball.
Which reminds me, we're open Thursday through Sunday. 12 to 8.
12 to 5. We have many Sixer shirts. We have the $5 bin that has the Joel and Benny. If you want a Ben Simmons shirt for $5, we got plenty of them.
That was a gamble.
Hey, if they get swept, they'll all be in there.
Playoff t-shirts are a gamble. We go down this road every once in a while. One of the teams will get hot, and we'll invest a lot of time and effort and money into making playoff shirts, and then they let us down as almost every time. And then but that benefits you, the listener, because we have that $5 bin and the discount bin.
All those Philadelphia Stars t-shirts we made this year, or fingers crossed on that.
They're 1-2. I've been watching the games. I'm trying to support. They're not doing so hot either.
We had those Claude Giroux for mayor t-shirts.
No.
Get rid of those.
Right in the garbage. I'm going to insulate my house with them.
Claude Drew for DA. Man, I don't know what we were thinking.
Too political. We were trying to get...
Too political.
We were
Nobody
trying to
wants
get,
to hear it.
Nobody, yeah, nobody's into it.
We're trying.
Nobody liked our Lynn Abrams as a goalie t-shirt either. When, right in the discount bin. This episode isn't about any of this. It's about...
I was just going to say, like, Anthony Williams, touchdown. For mayor.
Cut all of this. This is terrible.
That's why we don't get political. That's why we don't get political.
No, we're here to talk about some true winners, the 1983 76ers team, which we feel is unfairly overlooked when talking about the greatest teams in NBA history. The franchise lost the NBA Finals in 77, 80, and 82, and suffered an even more agonizing conference finals loss in 81 that cost them an almost sure title. So Philadelphia was hungry for a championship in 1983. That was their year that they finally went over the top. So join us today as we examine the 1983 Sixers, the first superstar team in NBA history.
I mean, that's cool. They were exciting to watch them. That meant for like that many years, even maybe a year before that.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you know, like the Flyers have been boring for like 10 years. Like, some of these teams have been like not doing anything. Even the Sixers we're watching now, the process, we've been watching for years. Like,
yeah, like, yeah, like
know,
6, 7 years.
It's fun to watch it for a bunch of years. I don't know.
Yeah, it's entertaining. They always give you a show. Like you mentioned, the Flyers, when we were kids, that was the 90s and the early aughts. That was the team everyone followed because they gave you a post.
They were the most competitive Philly team. That's why we're Flyers fans for life.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. So I guess one of the reasons I wanted to do this episode this week is I've been watching that HBO show, Winning Time, with John C. Reilly. It's about the L.A. Lakers.
Wait, I thought you were talking about Minx. Don't show it all the wieners.
Wieners?
I'll tell you, Winning Time has its share of wieners, too. Wieners is HBO's new thing. Oh. They're definitely hanging dong.
Wieners are
ends,
you know.
That's the 22. That's what they're going for in 2022.
That's how you break barriers.
Yeah, more male frontal nudity. Am I right? That's what everybody's clamoring for.
Yeah, movies used to have sex scenes. Now they just have wieners.
Just hang dong, man. That's what we're all there for anyway. The eggplant emoji is the most popular emoji for a reason.
That's true. That is true.
That is a fact. That is a fact.
So I've been watching that show, Winning Time, and it's centered on the Lakers-Celtics rivalry, and they were going through the first season, and I don't know much about Lakers history other than, you know, the 30 for 30 that I'd seen, but they're going over the course of the year, building up the Celtics, and I was like, I'm pretty sure, didn't the Sixers go to the championship in 1980? And it didn't, like, occur to me. It didn't click for me until... you know, several episodes in that, I guess that's the twist coming at the end of the season. They don't play the Celtics in 1980. They play the Sixers. It catches them by surprise or whatever because they spend all year prepping for Boston. And it made me realize then doing this episode, or I looked onto the Wikipedia and I was like, wow, they actually went to the finals a bunch of times in these years and then won in 83. And it's like, why isn't the Sixers mentioned in the same breath as the Lakers-Celtics rivalry? They faced off just as many times. There's just as big.
Did you get to the bottom of this?
The Sixers. Well, I mean, I guess it's because the Sixers only won the one year, so they're you know edged out by these two other really great teams that they competed with, and it's you know easy for a documentary to just frame it this way. And I'm interested to see where the end of the season for Winning Time goes and how they play that. If they even, I feel like there'll be some like massive disrespect where they won't even show the finals. They won't even show them playing Philadelphia because it's not worth your time or whatever.
That's an interesting take. I have a question. You said you feel like you know a lot about this topic.
Oh, don't call me out.
Why are Irish people Celtic, but the basketball team, the Celtics? I don't get it.
I think that's just one of those things where I guess it's the way people pronounce things in Boston. I guess it's the way we say
Boston
Argan
thing.
Avenue.
That makes sense. That makes sense. That makes sense.
I think it's just a Boston thing.
Onion.
Beans.
Beans.
Right? That's what people from Boston say.
Yeah, they say beans.
Beans. Yeah, okay. That makes sense. Okay.
But like I was getting at, the Lakers and the Sixers faced off against one another in 1980 and then again in the 83 series, which we're going to talk about today. Do you guys have any recollections or memories of any of... I mean, we talked about a lot of this in the Charles Barkley episode because that kind of picks up in 85, but what's your early understanding of this of the Sixers as a superstar team?
My memory as a young kid remembering these teams was that they were once great, but and this was like the remains of them in the late 80s. Like this is like old man Mike Schmidt, and this is what the Sixers used to look like. You know, it was all like this is like the fallen Roman Empire. You know, this is like, oh wow, this is what they look like.
Yeah.
I remember because when I as a kid watching the 2001 Sixers when they went to the finals and they played the Lakers.
Right. That's again that rivalry that no one wants to talk about.
I remember being
getting beat by LA.
Yeah. It's old news. It's old hat. I remember
beat down by a major city.
Hey, we hate the Dodgers too. I feel like there's something there.
I just remember looking up because I was like, because I know the Sixers didn't win when I was a kid, and I was like, I wonder if they ever won the championship. And then I looked it up, and it was 83, which is before I was born. But the only other thing I guess I kind of knew was like it was like the tail end of Dr. J's career. It was like his last like incredible year, or one of them.
Yes, it was. It was towards the end of Dr. J's career, and like I said, just after this, Charles Barkley kind of comes
in. He had tenure by then.
Yeah,
he's a veteran.
Yeah, it's like all the guys who won the 2008 World Series. They kept him around way too long.
Doctors don't get tenure.
Oh.
Right?
Oh, I just thought they did. You got me.
I don't fucking know. Obviously, we're not doctors.
Maybe they get like something.
What's a level above a doctor? A super doctor, I guess.
A super doctor.
Super doctor.
They give when you retire, they give you a golden scalpel.
You don't have to wash your hands anymore before surgery.
You made it.
Yeah, you made it. You're in. You're a super doctor. In the late 1960s, the NBA wasn't the powerful league we know today. At that time, the NBA was challenged by different professional basketball leagues. Among them, the most famous was probably the ABA. Created in 1967, the ABA existed for about 10 years.
And the ABA was like the
Golden Globes of basketball leagues.
It was more fun, though. They had the red, white, and blue basketball, so it was more fun.
Oh, that's right.
Fun. But it was also like, I don't know a lot about the ABA, but it was like the style was a little flashier and it was like a little different. And that got brought over to the NBA when they.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
like
I said, the Golden Globes. I got it.
The Golden Globes, the flashy Oscars.
I think our listeners get it.
Everyone, yeah. Dr. J, as he was already known, played for the New York Nets, who had just finished second in the regular season in the ABA that year. Top scorer in the ABA with 29.3 points per game, Julius Erving was also a fierce rebounder with an average of 11 rebounds per game. And he added 5 assists per game while leading his New York Nets to the ABA championship title that year.
Those are still great numbers, even today.
At the time of the NBA-ABA merger, the Knicks demanded a $4.8 million payout because the Nets were invading their territory in New York. The Nets were not in a position to pay that amount, so they were forced to trade Julius Erving to the Philadelphia Sixers for $3 million.
Oh, wow.
Whoa, that's, and I guess this is how the Nets ended up in Newark.
Yeah.
Huh.
So we got the, once again, Philly gets the New York's runoffs. Here's our scraps.
It sounds like the Knicks were so eager
for
to...
For all you new Philadelphians.
Yeah, the Knicks were so eager to screw the Nets that they didn't mind that it helped Philadelphia.
That's how little they...
Look, like these guys are about to live in Manhattan, and then they lived in Newark instead. And it's like, yes, the bagels, yes, the bagels are wonderful, but...
No pretzel.
What else?
And the Knicks would pay for that because they would end up losing to the Sixers on their way on the Sixers' way to the 1983 title in the playoffs. So this came back to bite them in the ass. Yeah.
Rainy-ass. Yep.
When Julius Erving arrived on the Sixers, the team had just finished the season with 46 wins, but was easily eliminated in the first round of the 1976 playoffs. So
easily.
They weren't slouching, but they didn't have that playoff contention. They didn't have any kind of like secret weapon.
Well, it was the bicentennial. Everybody was busy, so
everybody was really hungover from the celebration.
Everyone was drunk on Ben Franklin's wine.
They had to paint the flagpoles all day and then play at night, so they were tired.
Right, that was the Sixers' job.
Those red, white, and blue, Dr. J painted those.
That's how they got them up so high.
Julius Erving's presence made all the difference. In the 1977 NBA playoffs, Julius Erving averaged 27.3 points, leading the Sixers to the NBA Finals, where they were beaten by the Blazers.
Blazers.
This has almost nothing to do with anything, but the other Philadelphia hockey team was the Blazers.
Oh,
that's a cool name. I don't think any team goes by that now.
Yeah. Well, a blaze would melt the ice, though.
I think that was like the point. They're so hot. They're so hot. They're on fire, even when it's cold.
Oh, I don't like that. That's why they're not around.
I don't know. Do people want to hear about that team? We're making our way through all the also-rans this year.
Top five cheesesteak toppings.
I think people would rather hear about that.
I know I just rattle them off, but I think it should be a whole episode.
Mayonnaise.
Mayo.
Save it. That'll be our top rated episode.
Save it. That's the live episode.
That's the live. It's all actually roast pork sandwiches.
Everyone gets a roast pork at the cheesesteak episode.
Everyone gets a roast pork sandwich, yeah. Santa Claus gives everybody a roast pork sandwich.
He carves it off the pig right there on stage. Provolone or American?
School bus, yeah.
Provolone or American. There's no cheese
sharp,
option.
No,
you have to take.
It's provolone or sharp provolone. It's sharp or sharper. And if you say no, you go, what are you talking about?
What?
That's what Santa says.
Make sure you get extra gravy. You want the roll sopping wet.
Mm-hmm. Let's just open a deli. Screw all this.
I don't know. Would people buy our sandwiches? I don't know.
No.
I want it. The following year, the Sixers dominated the regular season, winning 55 games, but could not repeat its performance of the following season. They lost in the Eastern Conference Final against the Washington Bullets. Didn't make it as far that time. At the same time, the Sixers used their second-round draft pick to select Maurice Cheeks, a graduate of West Texas A&M University. Mo Cheeks was a point guard with a solid defensive reputation, so he really helped round out the team, take some pressure off of Dr. J.
Fun side note, Mo Cheeks is my stripper name on the weekends.
Every Saturday at the Republican.
Where? Yeah, where, Beerman? 1507 East Passyunk Avenue between 12 and 5.
And Pennsport Pub.
Bring your own baby lotion. During the 1979-80 season, the team won 59 games, and Julius Erving finished second in the MVP election. The Sixers reached the NBA Finals for the second time in the Julius Erving era. Unfortunately, they met the Lakers and an exceptional rookie named Magic Johnson. Despite being his rookie season, Magic Johnson was unstoppable. His 42 points and 15 rebounds remained one of the best performances in NBA history.
That guy was pretty good.
It's magic, 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 magic.
That guy was pretty good.
That's a City Pop song.
I love City Pop. It's my favorite kind of music.
Favorite kind of music.
Julius Erving Sixers had once again come close to winning the NBA title, but couldn't come away with the ring. In 81, the team finished just behind the Boston Celtics in the regular season with the record of 62 wins for just 20 losses. Julius Erving was individually crowned with a well-deserved MVP title. So
nice.
I guess this is the Sixers-Lakers rivalry. They finally get to it here. The following year is no different. Julius Erving continued to dominate the NBA at the individual level. Around him, Andrew Toney, Bobby Jones, and Maurice Cheeks continued to grow, and the Sixers had a season with 58 wins. This time, the Eastern Conference Finals, the Sixers defeated Larry Bird Celtics in a tight seven-game series.
Take that, Larry.
Yeah.
Sit down, Larry. This is what it looks like, Larry.
What a bum.
In this context, it just feels like the Lakers and the Sixers have a rivalry, and the Celtics are only in the mix because Larry Bird, you know.
Well, LA's got better PR, so.
Yeah, they're making the movie, you know.
Yeah.
Now, in the NBA Finals, the Sixers again face the Lakers in what was clearly a rematch of the 1980s Finals, the 1980 Finals.
They're going to win. They're winning this time, dude.
They got the fire in their belly. It's like Rocky II. You know, they lost the first time, but they're coming back strong.
It's like Rocky II.
Going the distance.
Mm-hmm.
No, they went the distance. Now
they went the distance.
Go
they're,
for it.
Now they're
go
chasing chickens and eating eat lightning and crap and thunder.
And you have a sex robot.
I wish the 1982-83 Sixers had a robot in the locker room. I think that would be great. That would
They probably did the robot in the locker room.
And it was relevant and not ironic. You're right.
Yeah.
Actually, Bierman, you're 100% correct, because when I watched some footage from Game 2 of this series, and Big Shot is in the crowd doing popping and locking. You're not even exaggerating.
He learned it from
Turbo the Hobo.
Turbo the Hobo. He learned it.
I like that the podcast is developing a supporting cast of made up people.
Yeah, yeah.
Of NPCs, if you will.
Yeah. Turbo the Hobo, Rick Burns, Theater Mike.
Rick Burns.
Non playable characters.
The giant fork and knife from the.
The giant.
They don't talk about.
Well, they ran away together.
Yeah, they were with the spoon.
With the spoon. At the end of the 1982 season, Julius Erving Sixers had reached three NBA Finals in the last six seasons. The Sixers are undeniably a great team, but they were stuck in the era of the Celtics and the Lakers' domination. So we just don't remember them in the same way that we remember these teams.
Yeah. Yeah, they got the shaft.
Yeah, they really did. And there's
they didn't get to write the book.
No, man.
They didn't get to write the that's bullshit.
It was a little hard to find, like, the behind-the-scenes story of the 83 Sixers. There's lots of, like, there's lots of articles that give you, like, a rundown on the roster and the stats and what made them such a great team. And they explain it to you, and it is obvious, you know, how many MVPs and All-Stars there are. But it is, it's just, like, it can't compare with the media machine that creates five-part ESPN documentaries about the Lakers-Celtics rivalry, you know?
Yeah.
By By 1982, the Sixers' window to win a title with this roster was about to close. Julius Erving was already 32 years old, and he wouldn't be able to maintain his level of play for much longer.
An old man.
Old piece of shit. You're washed up.
Where's
You're
your Walker, old man? Yeah. Here's your Glenn Miller record.
That's when the owners of the Sixers set up an exceptional trade and grabbed Moses Malone. He was on the Houston Rockets.
He had those butterscotch candies in his pocket.
Dr. J, you mean the old man?
The old man. Sorry, I had one more. Sorry.
Moses Malone was probably the best player in the NBA at the time. He had just been elected MVP by turning in 31.1 points and 14.7 rebounds per game.
Damn.
Yeah. When Moses Malone joined the Sixers at the beginning of the 1982-83 season, the Sixers had five all-star players in their ranks, with Moses Malone, Julius Erving, Andrew Toney, Maurice Cheeks, and Bobby Jones. In addition, the team had the last two MVPs of the regular season in the NBA, Dr. J and...
This is a super group, dude.
Yeah, it is. It's the first super group, yes. Dr. J and Moses Malone.
The traveling Wilburys of basketball players.
But they can't travel, though. Traveling,
they can't travel.
You get fouled.
It's illegal.
You get fouled.
It's illegal.
The dribbling Wilburys, right? At the time, never before had a team been stacked with so many star players in its ranks. This was the first super team in NBA history.
Damn.
Yeah. I mean, and again, we're talking about Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but we just named five Sixers players superstars all on one team at the same time.
Yeah, who cares about those bums?
I mean,
they're like the Voltron. They're like Voltron, dude. They link up.
They're like Voltron.
Yes. Yes, the Sixers are just like Voltron. Doing the robot.
People who like the Sixers listen to this podcast and like, what are they talking about?
What's a Voltron?
Like that.
The chemistry worked immediately. Form of Voltron, between Moses Malone and Julius Erving. Determined to win the NBA title, Dr. J gave the keys of the team to Moses Malone without hesitation. So he kind of took a step back and let Moses Malone be the more aggressive player.
That's great. That he wasn't like...
He's like, you do it.
Yeah, and he'll play his role and not try to be...
Hot dog it.
Hot dog in the grandstanding.
Dominating the regular season, the Sixers finished with the NBA record, the best NBA record that year. They had 65 wins, only 17 losses.
Damn.
Yes.
They're all flukes. 17 flukes.
Yeah, they slipped on 17 banana peels.
Yeah. Lumpy mattresses, probably.
It's a very respectable number. The Bulls team, the 94-95 Bulls team that everybody says is the best in NBA history, they had something like 70 wins. So it's not that far off from what people consider the absolute best. By the time of the 1983 playoffs, the Sixers were the clear favorites. The Sixers dominated the regular season, but in the playoffs, they steamrolled over their opponents in a run that will go down in history. And I watched a NBA-produced hour-long retrospective. I mean, you could call it a documentary about the 1983 Sixers championship run. And I guess the NBA produced them every year for whoever won, so that they could sell VHS tapes on Sunday afternoons to people's uncles. And
Betamax.
Yeah, Betamax back then, you're right. And I guess this hour-long piece, it kind of had to really fill up the early part of the season because the playoffs go by pretty quickly. Moses Malone famously said that when he was asked how he thought the playoffs were going to go, he said, "Foe, foe, foe," as in four games sweeping all their opponents. And he wasn't that far off. The New York Knicks were swept 4-0 in the first round in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Bucks were able to snatch a game after the Sixers led the series 3-0, but Philly came back in the next game to end the series on top.
Bjerman and I were just talking about this. When it's called like a gentleman sweep, when you're up 3-0, and then you like lose the fourth game to kind of extend the series to like get everyone paid an extra game and you could win at home. I just like kind of learned about this phrase and right. I keep an eye out for it all the time.
Right.
But I don't know. I noticed that this is kind of the situation here too.
Fuck that.
I mean, I guess it happened enough times where there's a name for it, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I
Well, whether they admit it or not, that's like, that's what happens and that's the result, you know?
Yeah, sure.
I definitely think that sweeps are not really great for television contracts. You know, TNT has, they've already rented the studio space and paid for, gotten the advertising money promised to them. And now
sure.
if there's no playoff game, they can't charge those prices. So everybody wants to see it. Everybody in the corporate side wants to see it go seven games. Everybody who owns a concession stand in those stadiums want to see it go seven games. But, the fans want to see a sweep. They don't want to have to sweat it. They want to watch their team just, like, roll on to victory.
No one wants to sweat it. Sure.
Want to see a squash match.
Squash match.
In the NBA Finals, the Sixers met the Lakers in a rematch of their previous encounter. But that time, Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had won. This time, everything was different for the Sixers. Kareem was 36 years old, and he couldn't defend against Moses Malone in his prime. Over the course of these NBA finals, one statistic shows how huge Moses Malone's dominance of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was. Moses Malone had taken 72 rebounds in four games against just 30 from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Damn.
He was 38.
So triple the number.
I'm sorry, 36. Yeah. This makes a difference.
Yeah, he was just get. Yeah, I know.
He's got heartburn all the time. It's different.
I also read that he had missed a couple of games or at least two games during the year for migraines. So, you know.
Migraines, wow.
Yeah.
Heartburn and migraines.
It's all that Bruce Lee training he did.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, that's right, yeah. He was in an airplane, too. Very funny.
He was in the airplane.
That's right, that's right.
With 25.8 points and 18 rebounds per game, Moses Malone was the natural MVP of the NBA Finals. The Sixers managed to sweep the Lakers despite attempting 2 3-pointers all series and making none of them.
Two.
Only twice. They only tried twice, and they didn't make them.
Jesus.
So they did it the hard way. So I watched a bunch of highlights from these games. It's very entertaining. The crowd is very very lively, both in Philadelphia and in L.A. But something that I thought was really neat was Jack Nicholson came to Philadelphia for game two because the first two games were played in Philly. And obviously, Philly whooped him.
Jack Nicholson was at the Spectrum.
Yeah. Up front, courtside, just like as you do and as he's known for. And he got up, and there's the footage they use of him in the NBA documentary is of him booing the Lakers for doing so badly.
Boo the Lakers. He sighs with the crowd.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a performer. Mm. Gonna give the people what they want.
He was an easy rider, you know.
It's no airplane.
He was in head, you know.
The Sixers won their championship on a Tuesday night in L.A., and the parade was held on Thursday afternoon, June 2nd, 1983, in Philadelphia. With 1.7 million people waving signs, pennants, and brooms lining Broad Street on a glorious sunny day, culminating at the Vet. I saw one sign in the documentary. One kid was holding up a sign that said, "We Kareemed them."
Nice.
Good pun. Good pun.
Nice. That's
a good one, right?
And that little boy ended up growing up to be John Zito. They put on a t-shirt.
Yeah, that's right. I trademarked it. It's mine now.
Trademarked. Didn't matter. People do whatever they want.
The funniest thing I saw, the best sign I saw somebody was holding up was they had the magician, but we had the physician. So I guess it's magic versus
magic.
Oh,
man. Oh,
yeah. Wow.
Good, right?
Damn, everyone really came with these sassy signs.
Yeah.
This was rap. Everybody was rapping by this point.
Rapping. You're right. Everyone had, it was there. Everyone was there to say.
People weren't wasting their content, giving it away on Twitter in meme form. They had to go out on the street with a sign. You had to get caught by a news camera and end up in an NBA documentary for your meme to last. Irving, who received the loudest and longest ovation, had this to say at the parade. Quote, "We thank you, fans, from the bottom of our hearts for this day and coming out here and sharing this with us. We've been trying to get this for 7 years. Now we're in a situation where the people of Philadelphia who have friends, relatives, acquaintances, and even enemies in Boston, New York, Los Angeles, Houston, Milwaukee, Atlanta, Chicago, Washington, and even Philadelphia, now we can say we're world champions. There was nothing pretty about what we did to the NBA this year. It was absolutely beautiful." End quote.
Damn, everyone, take that.
That was his version of "No one likes us, we don't care."
Yeah, sit down, Milwaukee. I just take it. Milwaukee, so mean.
He read so many cities' names.
He's
like, Philadelphians are hated.
Take that.
In Boston, New York, Los Angeles, Bethesda.
Oh, come on, Bethesda. We made up with them.
We'll send them a pretzel gift basket.
Send them a pretzel gift basket. Yo, I've been eating so many pretzels since we did the pretzel episode. I ate so many today. I ate two different kinds today. And I was like, this is wrong.
But it feels so right.
I didn't even start with... And then the mustard starts. It's whenever we have a food episode, I binge on the thing. It's... Why don't we do like a salad episode?
Did you do any soft pretzels or just snack pretzels? Just pretzels, just like bagged salt, hard pretzels.
I went to PA General and bought the Hammond's pretzels.
Did you really?
Yeah,
I've been thinking about them so much.
You went there and bought them from them?
Yeah, they scammed us, dude. They were trying to get us hooked on them, and it worked.
Mm-hmm. First one's
free.
Yep. Yeah. And it worked. It totally
these are
worked.
The ones George W. Bush joked on. I'll try those, and they're delicious.
That is it.
That's the gateway.
It's the gateway.
Political
try
humor.
Yeah. I'll try
political humor. That's the gateway.
Political humor. Political jokes. Political t-shirts.
Basking in the glow of a Sixers championship win, Philly electro rap pioneers G5, formerly known as Galaxy 5, recorded a new song titled "Keep It On." This bouncy hype song is full of fun name checks to the Sixers players like Moses Malone, Dr. J, Maurice Cheeks, and Andrew Tooney. Tony, a legendary Sixers announcer Dave Zinkoff appears on the track to lend a little authenticity to the sound as well.
Yeah, I only found out about this recently, and because everybody knows they play the "Here They Come" from the 70s, but
right.
This is the 80s updated version. We'll play a minute of it right here. We're the Philadelphia fans.
I think it's very of its time. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I see why it didn't stick around because it's so relevant to the 83 team. It's not about the Sixers.
Yeah.
It's those guys who won. No. This is like a victory song. And I tried to find more on Rap Pioneer G5, also known as Galaxy 5. But you can't Google anything with the words G5 or Galaxy 5 on the internet without getting cell phone ads or conspiracy theories about Wi-Fi brainwashing you. So I didn't make it very deep into the Google search.
I have come across these keyword problems before.
not anticipated. When this guy was making up his rap name so long ago, he had no idea.
How am I going to Google this?
How am I going to Google this?
Come on, guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to get lost in the algorithm. If mm-hmm. only I had known. Honestly, this guy should sue Android. I mean, it's probably five of them. If he's the original Galaxy 5.
It's five guys. It wouldn't just be Galaxy 1.
Right, it's five guys. Five entities.
No, it's like Voltron. There's five.
The five-fingered fist of rap.
The 1983 title was the pinnacle for these Sixers. Having won their first league title, these players felt less hungry the following season. There were a lot of injuries to deal with, and they finished the season with 52 wins, but a first-round elimination in the playoffs was a major setback for the defending champions.
The end.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, if you really, I mean...
Cue the music.
If people want to know what happens next, you should check out our Charles Barkley episode. He shows up in, I think, 84 or 85, and, you know, the story of the Sixers picks up from there, and it kind of becomes his team, and the late 80s Sixers are, you know, forced to deal with diminishing returns, like Drove was talking about at the top of the show. The magic of the 1983 Sixers was well and truly over. When we talk about the greatest teams in NBA history, many people will tell you about Michael Jordan's Bulls team, who managed 72 wins in the 1995-96 season. Probably the oldest fans will tell you about the 1971-72 Lakers, who went on to win a record 33 straight before finishing the season with 69 wins. But unfortunately, too few people remember the 1983 Sixers, their 65 wins, and their NBA championship.
Thanks to us, though. It's going to... Everyone's going to be Googling it.
We're bringing it back.
Preserved here on Anchor at a podcast, wherever you listen to your podcast.
Wherever people Google Dr. J, we'll be there somewhere around page E or whatever.
Page E.
Most of the information from this week's episode came from a Medium article by Sylvian Sorrell. Who had a much more in-depth look at the, you know, stats and achievements of individual players. It's a little dry, but it is super informative, and I would recommend searching for.
Have any kaiju metaphors?
No.
I don't know if Voltron's a kaiju, though. I don't know what constitutes a kaiju. This could be its own podcast. Let's not even go down this road.
I'm sorry to bring this up.
Oh, no. You know, I totally... No, I guess you're right. Voltron does fight kaiju, possibly, you know. But
Voltron's
he is not a
kaiju.
Is not a kaiju, no. No, I see where you're going.
Sorry, send all the hate mail to me. Send all the hate mail to me, not Bierman.
I guess it's a it's like a gun. It's like a Voltron is like a Gundam.
At Tony T.
I don't know that. I don't know the term.
I'm sorry.
It's like a mega robot.
I shouldn't dabble with magic. I don't truly understand.
We'll do an episode on giant robots. We talk about them enough. Deep Blue. Deep Blue's from Philadelphia. Another sports champion.
Deep Blue, right? The chess episode.
You guys want to hear about the chess?
Dozens
you guys
of listeners.
About chess, right?
Zito, come on.
Nothing better
of people
than,
are interested.
Nothing better than computers playing chess. Except for computers playing solitaire, huh? Maybe we could.
Yeah, it's like it's like watching. It's like getting to play. No, you watch people play.
You. Do I watch the computer play? No, the computer thinks about it, tells you if it won. Deep Blue played the robot from Rocky IV to win Robot of the Millennium Chess Champion.
The Rocky IV robot, too handsy.
Before it retired to pulsations.
Too touchy.
Let's wrap this up.
I don't even know what we're talking about.
You should have played the music before. Yeah. Cut. Bye, everyone.
Okay, that's all there is to know about the 1983 76ers. Please check out our website, www.southfellini.com, for cool Philly-inspired merch. Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're at South Fellini everywhere. Follow along and join the conversation. We want to hear from you. Are you old enough to have gone to any of these games? Do you have an opinion on the Lakers-Celtics rivalry? Or do you have
what was it like?
Do you have you had any pretzels lately?
Did you?
Good ones.
Look out for new
flavors. Rank them.
Look out for new episodes of the podcast every Monday. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Wear a mask. Eat your veggies. do yoga, exercise, try and remain centered, focus on you.
Don't crack your knuckles.
Oh.
I already do it.
Go Sixers.